This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, every parent has been through this experience. Your kid asks you a simple question, you give him an answer. But then comes the whys. Whys. This is comedian Louis C.K.'s take on that situation.
This is my daughter the other day. She's like, Papa, why can't we go outside?
Well, because it's raining.
Why?
Well, water's coming out of the sky.
Why?
Because it was in a cloud.
Why?
Well, clouds form when there's vapor.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. That's, oh, I don't know any more things. Those are all the things I know.
Comedian Louis C.K. My next guest created the Flame Challenge 2 years ago based on his experience asking those whys as a child. And now he's in position to ask the scientists to explain some of the big questions of science to 11-year-olds around the world, and they pick the winner. Alan Alda is an actor, director, screenwriter, founding member of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University in New York. He's starring on Broadway in the play Love Letters. Always good to see you, Alan. You asked all those whys as a kid.
I did. In particular, I was very curious when I was 11 to know what was going on in a flame. It looked like something I'd never seen anywhere else in the world. So I asked the teacher, what's a flame? What's going on in there? And she said, it's oxidation. And that was the end of that. I never got any more from her. So now, 4 years ago, I started this contest called the Flame Challenge, where we ask scientists from all over the world, and in that first year, we asked them to explain what a flame is to 11-year-olds, and the 11-year-olds would judge the answers. Mm-hmm. And we've done it for 4 years now. This year's question is, what is sleep? And it's really interesting that the kids suggested questions. They suggested all kinds of, they wanted to know about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But, you know, what is wind? What are germs? Things like that. But the question that got the most votes from the kids was, what is sleep? And it really seems to be on their minds.
Yeah.
The kid who suggested the winning question was Christopher John Cassano from a school in Long Island. And he said, when he was talking about the contest, he said, I hope the answer is easy and that it answers the question completely and I don't have to think about it anymore.
Well, it's a good quote, because it's interesting that you brought that up, because we actually have a clip. The World Science Festival dropped in on the contentious judging panel 2 years, judging panel of kids 2 years ago. And this is what it sounded like.
These scientists are used to being in the lab and using all these giant words and all these great methods. And now that they're going to a kid's place, they don't know how to transition us. You gotta give these scientists some credit.
I think that the best thing you can do to make these good is be general, be relatable, and get to the point.
I love it. The kids are so serious and competent about the way they judge these entries. Mm-hmm. And what I love about the quote of this kid I just read was that he wants it to be clear. That's what I think he means by easy. But he also wants it to be informative when he says, I hope I can, you know, get a complete answer. And that's the most common complaint they have about the entries, is they're not informative enough. Not that they're not
interested. They like the details.
They want the information,
but
they want to be able to get it clearly. And they appreciate humor, but they don't want it to be silly. One kid said, after all, we're 11, we're not 7.
Grown-ups.
Well, he's right. Yeah, you know, there's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason that sleep was chosen, because it sounded like a great idea over all the other ideas.
Well, the kids voted on it.
They voted on it.
And they want to know. And what's interesting about this is that you don't have to be an expert in sleep if you're going to try to answer this question. If you're a scientist, your specialty doesn't have to be sleep. You have to be accurate, because mm-hmm. they'll be vetted for accuracy before the kids vote on them.
A few years ago, you stayed overnight at Robert Stickold's sleep lab at Harvard. He's one of our favorite scientists.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Show. What questions about sleep was he trying to answer?
Well, we're going to repeat a little bit of what he did to me in the sleep lab at the World Science Festival when we announced the winner of the Flame mm-hmm. Challenge in June. We're going to have a couple of people sleeping on stage or backstage, and we'll maybe have cameras on them. And when we get to REM sleep, the rapid eye movement sleep, we'll wake them up and see what they're dreaming about, if they are dreaming. And he woke me up while I was dreaming. I told him this bizarre dream about flying over Berlin in my nightshirt.
They call a psychologist in there. Wanted to know what that meant. Somebody down the hallway, come down and listen to Alan Alda.
I couldn't stop talking about it.
So for you, you get great pleasure out of doing this.
I
don't
do,
you?
Like, because I learn every time I get a chance to talk to scientists. I learn something that I didn't know before, and it's so there really is real psychic pleasure in learning something new. As long as, especially if you know it's true. I mean, there are plenty of things that we know that aren't true.
Mm-hmm. Does this take precedence? I mentioned you were in a play on Broadway. Does this sort of take precedence over studying your acting career, or are you more interested in?
No, I think I get tremendous pleasure out of acting, and I love when I'm in something really moving and believable, the way I am now in this play, Love Letters. I really feel I'm doing something worthwhile. But what I do is somehow cram all of these. It's in a way I'm cramming two careers together
because
I'm very passionate about communicating science.
Mm-hmm.
What I hope this Flame Challenge will do, I hope we'll get thousands of scientists trying to see if they can communicate to 11-year-olds. Not so they'll come up with a good answer. Not so they'll come up with we'll come up with better educated children. I want the scientists to have the experience of how tough it is and to say to themselves, I got to study this.
Right.
I want to find out how to communicate better. And that's what we're teaching at the Center for Communicating Science.
Let's talk about that a little bit. How do you teach scientists to be better communicators?
Well, what we do, which turns out to be very successful, is we put them through experiences that make them comfortable communicating with other people, make them aware of what's going on in the other person's mind as they talk to them or write for them. It's very easy to just spray information all over somebody where your main concern is, what am I saying and how do I say it? Whereas it's much more difficult, and it takes training, takes time to figure out how what you're saying is landing on the other person. Are they getting it? Are they getting the wrong impression? Are they losing interest? Are they curious to know more? Mm-hmm. You don't have to tell them everything you know. You really need to get them to want to know more. That's the first step.
Do they have to be motivated themselves?
I think they do. So far, we're working mostly with people who are self-selected. However, at Stony Brook, we teach, you know, courses in communication for credit, and some of them are mandated by the department heads. So we're not getting all self-selected people, but we're seeing improvement no matter what level you come in at. We also work with senior scientists around the country who are great communicators already. And no matter what level you come in at, you get better.
Yeah.
We teach them, you know, unconventional things like improvisation exercises, not to make them funny, not to make them able to make things up on their feet, but to get them to relate better to other people, because improvisation makes
you do that. Give me an idea how that would work.
Well, sometimes starting with the most basic exercise, like mirroring the other person's body. They stand facing each other, and one has to be the mirror for the other person. So you really have to let the other person into your consciousness.
Right.
Then we take it to a next step, and you have to mirror the other person's speech. While I'm talking, you have to say exactly what I'm saying at the moment, not as an echo, but at the same moment I'm saying it. So you have to be totally aware of what's happening in my mind and in my body. And things like that, they get much more complicated, the exercises. And these take a few weeks, usually, or at least a two-day session to get you started. But to really get it permanently implanted in you, to transform you into a better communicator, it should take place over a few weeks. And then when you talk to an audience, they're your pals. You're talking in a more personal way to them. You're talking with an intimate tone. You're aware that when you start to talk jargon, they're probably not going to get it. So you say it the simple way first, and then introduce them to the tough term.
So you have to sort of break down that ivory tower wall that scientists have, where they live and where the audience
And they live
lives.
There for a good reason. This is not to denigrate jargon. because why would you say something that takes five pages to say if you can say it in one special term? But people who haven't studied that term don't know it stands for five pages. It's just gibberish to them. So you have to be able to make it clear.
Well, let's go to the phones. 844-724-8255. It's Joben in Arlington, Virginia. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, I'm just really amazed and kind of blown away by this process. But one of the questions that I had was in terms of the importance of knowing what you need to communicate and what the question is. It seems like there's probably a difference in how you communicate straight facts versus a value judgment. But a lot of times the audience is expecting a certain answer, and it's important to be able to understand that. And I wanted to know what Mr. Alda's experiences at the center have been in trying to get that skill across, and, you know, any distinction between when you just need to communicate the facts versus providing some type of, you know, specific, I guess, you know, here's what we should do next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that when the scientist doesn't quite get what the audience is ready for or wants to know about, the important thing is to ask questions. That is, communication is, of course, a two-way street. For instance, right now, I'm not really sure what you mean by the difference between a value judgment and facts. So could you give me an example?
He's gone. So.
He's gone. Oh, okay.
But, I mean, do you teach them that to stay away from the value judgment, or if they have one, let's, you know, about the what they're doing, or is it just the facts, ma'am, just the facts?
Well, give me an example of what you mean by the two.
I'll give you one that's in the news a lot.
Yeah.
Global warming,
right.
or the value of carbon capture or cap and trade or stuff like that. Let's say they're environmental scientists. Should we do this? Or I'm just going to tell you what the issue is. I'm not going to tell you what to do about it or what political action or something you might take.
Just telling you what the issue is that it would be that saying that there's a discussion about this mm-hmm. question. If you are going to get into what you know about it and what your research shows, then I guess that's what you mean by telling the facts. But it's never a question of just telling the facts when you communicate science. Mm-hmm. You have to make those facts understandable and vivid to the person you're talking to. Otherwise, they're not even going to understand the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So then they'll make the value judgment once they get the facts.
Do you have to teach the scientists that perhaps the audience that they're going to talk to doesn't know what science is? I mean, you're going to talk science to people who really not quite sure what scientists do.
In a way, I think you're touching on a problem that a lot of scientists are worried about when they talk. At what level is the audience? What do they know already? Mm-hmm. How deeply can I go into this? I've talked to scientists about this, and some who are very good communicators who feel it never hurts to be clear and start as though you're talking at the most basic level. Mm-hmm. And then you can pile it on a little more in terms of complexity. But I don't think anybody minds having clarity aimed at them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it clear even to people in the know, because sometimes the same term is used in two different ways in two different disciplines. So it's a good idea, if it's not common language, put it in common language first so people understand how you mean it.
Talking with Alan Alda, founding member of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University. He's also starring on Broadway in Love Letters. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Let's talk a little bit more about the challenge. These are for scientists, right?
Yes, scientists are the ones we want to write these answers to what is sleep.
And if they have an idea, how do they become part of this?
The first thing to do is to go to flamechallenge.org and find the rules. And one of the things they'll find there is that for the first time we're offering a $1,000 prize.
Whoa.
And a trip to New York and the World Science Festival in June, where the winner will be announced. And they'll... The way to submit the answer to the question is either in written form, 300 words or less, or a video,
mm-hmm.
which needs to be 5 minutes or less,
mm-hmm.
and or some kind of graphic thing, and the entries are going to be judged on first by a panel for accuracy. So we don't want the kids to vote on something that's inaccurate, but it's not a test of what you know if you're a scientist. It's a test of how you can communicate what you understand.
So there's no time limit that you have to tell that story.
Well, there is. You
there
have
is.
5 minutes
you
if
have
it's a video.
5 minutes.
Or 300 words if it's a written thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other time limit that's important is that the deadline for submissions is February 13th.
Mm-hmm. Now, remember the first, the Flame Challenge was a beautifully done cartoon.
Yeah, it was a video, an animated video, and he wrote the song, he performed it. It was amazing.
Are you expecting that kind of...
We've had some very good videos and very good verbal explanations with wit and an understanding of the people who are going to read it, you know, really thinking about the audience. So I'm looking forward to some really good submissions because we have, you know, you can go to the website and you can see what other people have done. And you see how high the bar has been raised by the previous entrants. So I think that's going to generate some really interesting stuff.
Do the kids have a lot of fun judging this
stuff?
They
love it. We have something called a worldwide assembly where we, on the internet, the day before everybody votes around the world. We've got classrooms all over the world. Teachers register their classes. Last year we had 27,000 kids.
Wow.
But we take 10 schools and I talk to them via internet, and everybody else can see these 10 schools as they discuss the entries. And they're so good at it. They're serious and they're cooperative, and they discuss it among themselves, don't always agree. They have such a good time doing it and they learn enough that several kids have told their teachers, I wish we could learn everything this way, judging the entries by the people who know. It puts them in a position of power,
yeah,
and it forces them, or at least puts them in a position, to have to compare two or three or four different entries and learn enough to be able to say, you haven't been complete in your entry. So they have to know more about it than they would if they were just told, learn this.
Well, good luck to you, Alan.
Thank
you. Sounds exciting. We'll have you back when we have the winner.
Right? That would be great.
Come back,
yeah,
when the winner.
Great.
Alan Alda, founding member of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook. He's also starring on Broadway in Love Letters. Good luck with that
Thank
Broadway
you.
Show,
That's
too.
That's nice. Thank you.